This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, y'all. We got a great show planned for you. Dr. D's still not feeling quite well, so you might hear some strange sounds coming out of me, but that's okay. We got a great show planned for you. We got Ryan Sheldon joining us, doing a little body positivity, and of course, talking about the new campaign that he's the face of. And we've got our sex positive segment tonight, so we've got Caged Jock joining us to talk about chastity. Ah, yes, that's right, because we like to normalize diverse, creative ways of being here. Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page, but I wanted to open the show by talking to culture writer Jill Gutowitz. You know, her Twitter's awesome. I love her perspective on everything, but she had written an article for Teen Vogue about the current state of the Oscars. So Jill's with us now. Jill, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good. So I follow you on Twitter, and, you know, I always think your stuff is very profound and also humorous as hell.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Yes, my tweets about being gay and oat milk are very profound.
The way that you manage to fold in lesbianism into whatever the topic of the day is quite amazing.
Oh, it can be inserted into anything.
I think that's my favorite part, is like, how's she going to find a way to fold that in this time? So
yes, easily.
The article you wrote for Teen Vogue, you kind of explained to me something that I was struggling with. So for those that aren't familiar, you wrote an amazing article for Teen Vogue about the Oscar nominations, and is it confirming that we're living in a different reality than men? And I just want to start by reading your quote, and I'm going to paraphrase it. So you said, fighting for women, people of color, and queer people to be nominated across all categories is a battle that we can't win because our values are not the same as the people who are ascribing the value. Now, that's a profound statement, because that's why I had stopped watching the award shows, is because I wasn't relating personally, and I'm a man, male identified. I wasn't relating, mm-hmm. even from my male queer perspective, with the choices they were making. And then you saying that, I thought, my God, if we expand that. So tell us a little bit more.
Yeah, look, I want to right off the bat say, like, I have not seen all of the movies that were nominated. Like, I haven't seen The Irishman. I haven't seen 1917 and The Joker. And so, like, whatever, you know, I'm saying is not like these movies are better than these movies, so much as, like, you know, commenting on a system of how things get nominated. And I think that, you know, in conversations that I had with other men, especially like straight men, in the past year, I started realizing that, you know, it felt like I was living in a different reality than them, because they would say, like, you know, oh, I loved Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I loved Joker, and I loved blah, blah. And they'd be like, what kind of films did you like this year? And I would be like, well, Booksmart was my favorite of 2019. I loved Hustlers. I loved Us. And I would get these responses that were kind of like, oh, Hustlers, is that one with J-Lo? Or, oh, that was good. And I was kind of like, well, what makes you even think to say, oh, that was good? Is it because you saw a trailer and it was all women, yes, and women of color, and you were like, oh, well, this is like a dumb chick flick or something?
Right.
And, you know, and that, like, system, I think, is, like, trickle down, because the people who are ascribing value to these movies and telling, you know, everyone via what gets awarded an Oscar, telling everyone what's good, are people who are only ascribing value to movies that are about men, specifically white men.
And it's interesting.
And so,
yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No. I was saying, you know, it's interesting when we, like, even pan it out, because I was thinking about how Booksmart, that was one of the films that got censored on airplanes, correct?
Yes,
the lesbian scenes, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And,
so we don't even
Olivia
have
the Wilde, like, fought with Delta about it.
Yeah. So we don't even have the full films accessible in some places where some of these people might stumble upon them, because that's where I see a lot of my films, is on airplanes, because I fly a lot.
Right. Yeah, and I felt like it was, I felt like this year's nominations were a huge backstep from last year, where, you know, I went back and looked at everything, and we had so many queer films nominated last year that won too, like The Favorite and Can You Ever Forgive Me, you know, there was Roma, there was Black Klansman, like all these kind of, you know, diverse stories with diverse casts and people helming the films. And, you know, it was by no means like perfect, but to see this year's nominations be so predominantly white and male, especially the directing category, I was like, this is, I mean, we're not getting anywhere. Like, how do we win this fight against people who don't see value in movies about women or young women?
Okay, so that's kind of my question. I was looking through your article to see if you touched upon this, and you didn't hit it in a way that was clear to me, so I wanted to ask you that. Do you think it's about us creating a new system, or do you think it's about us pushing for space within the current system?
I think it's about pushing for space within the current system. You know, obviously we have been doing that, and it's like not extremely working, but... You know, I think there were a lot of people who were writing off the Oscars that morning, saying like, this is, you know, an outdated system. You know, this doesn't matter anymore, but it does matter because, you know, films that get nominated for Oscars, do better at the box office, which influences filmmakers' careers. And it also, you know, like culturally impacts us and, you know, it tells us what kind of stories people want to see and, you know, everything. It can validate somebody's story and be like, oh, wow, that won an Oscar. That must mean that my story matters.
I just was wondering, like, if you think the solution, and you kind of, I loved your answer, is the solution about, you know.
Oh, right. Yeah. And so I think that, you know, like, I was reading about how the Academy system works, because I honestly didn't know much about it. And the thing about the directing category, which typically, you know, gatekeeps and boxes out women, is that directors are voting on these movies. And because the system is so like flawed and has been forever, most directors in the Academy are men. And so, you know, these are people who are saying these stories don't matter to us. But I think that, like, the reason I think that we should fix this system is because it is so impactful and it has been for so long. And, you know, it feels garbagey, in my opinion, to be like, well, we should just have our own awards show. It's like, no, like, this is the one that always has mattered and it should be inclusive. It should include women and people of color and queer people.
Yeah, and I'm always trying to think in like the activistic perspective, and I agree that I think if there were people that would go see certain films because they were nominated, right? Because for some people, that's what makes them maybe leave their house to see a film. And if it happened to be a queer-centered or female-centered film, or a film centered in people of color, that would maybe have a trickle-down effect and normalize that on these individuals as well. And so I kind of like that perspective too.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that it's kind of a myth that, like, you know, audiences won't watch movies that are about one specific niche audience, you know? But I do think that the Academy is kind of skewed in the way that it nominates movies about queer people or people of color. Like, you know, I saw a bunch of people on Twitter commenting on how, you know, the message was kind of clear that it was like, yes, let's nominate people of color as long as they're like in a movie about like racism or slavery. And it's like, that's also not the kind of, or the only kind of stories about people of color that should be, you know, valued in this system.
Yeah, it's like the gay movies. It's so centered around coming out, starring Nicole Kidman,
yeah,
always as the mom. You're like, there's a lot more that goes on in you know, queer life than just the coming out story. I think I loved also watching Issa Rae reading the directing nominations, and at the end she's like, congratulations, men, or something like that.
Yeah, congratulations to all these men. I love that.
subtle shade. Jill Gutowitz, where can people find you?
You can find me at Twitter, where you will find out too much information about me. That's at Jillboard, like billboard, but with a J.
Too much stuff, but it's always good stuff. Thanks so much for being a part of Loveline.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have an awesome night. Good night.
Okay, you too.
All right, coming up next, we're going to be doing Freak on the Street. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com. All right, we're back, and it's time for our sex positivity segment, where we normalize creative, diverse ways of being. And tonight we have Caged Jock with us, adult actor, underwear model based in New York City. What's going on? How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being with us. So let's kind of jump right in. One of the things I wanted to just start with is this whole concept of chastity around eroticism. Mm-hmm. So for those that aren't familiar with that concept, how do you explain that?
So it's just the idea of wearing this device on your genital. And it's for the BDSM couple who wanted to experience that dominant and submissive side. So the dominant one would, like the master one, he would be holding the key, and then he would you know, decide when or how their partner get to take it off.
I love that. So clear cut. And for you as an individual, how did you stumble upon this? How did you become aware of this? Or how did you even realize that it was something that was arousing to you?
Well, I've always been a really sexually open-minded person.
Okay.
And I like to experiment with new things. So back in 2015, I would just, when Tumblr was still a thing, I would just browsing online, and then one thing and get to another, and then I just discover it. I read it, and I was just fascinated with it. I'm like, let me just try, give this a try to see how I like it. And I end up liking it. So
God bless Tumblr.
The rest is history.
God bless Tumblr.
It was really fun. I miss Tumblr.
I know. We're at a loss without it. There's a lot of people that are like, can someone please bring it back in some capacity? Because it's a powerful educational tool, but also a resource for a lot of people sexually. Now, I think another thing that's really fascinating is representation, sexually representation in porn. So let's talk a little bit about Asian actors. Because I have my friend Corey Coons, he's an Asian porn performer, and he would often talk about that. He would say to me, you know, his presence is so meaningful because a lot of people that are Asian would look at porn and they couldn't see themselves being eroticized. So talk to us a little bit about that.
So growing up, I didn't see any Asian actors in pornography. And you know, like when you're young and you're at the age of discovery, that's how you learn about your sexual interests, and it's a way for you to educate yourself about your attraction and your partners and what you're attracted to. And I didn't see any of that on screen. So when it was time for me to be sexually active and started dating, I was kind of question my identity, how I fit in with the dating scene. So it was really, really difficult. That's why when I started doing porn, at first I hid my face because I wasn't really interested in doing it for the attention.
Okay.
I was just doing it just for fun. And then I realized there's not a lot of Asian actors out there. And I realized the importance of representation. So I decided to show my face.
Yeah, and that's what's so funny is a lot of people don't see porn for the powerful, transformative, confidence-inducing vehicle it can be. But I refer a lot of people in my clinical practice to porn to see themselves reflected back with desirability. And so I appreciate what you're doing. And one of the things, you know, you said in the pre-interview was that there's two messages that are meaningful to you. One is that Asian men can be seen as desirable by people that might not have seen it as such. And then two, people seeing themselves on screen. And I think that's powerful, where there's a lot of sexual racism, right? And people sometimes via porn or OnlyFans stumble upon something that they didn't realize they were turned on by. And I love the idea of that, because we're all a little more sexually fluid than we let on if we can push through some of this racism, right?
Right. That's what I think about that, the positivity of sex work and representation on screen is that sex is where we learn about intimacy and romance. And that's really a necessary ingredient to create this attraction where you can like jumpstart to have a successful relationship. And the exposure is what really creates acceptance. So I think this is why representation in sex work is so important.
Yeah, and tonight we're talking with Cage Jock, an underwear model and also adult actor. And what I think is beautiful is you're kind of normalizing a multitude of things, not only just Asian representation, but also some kinky styles of being sexually with the chastity, the sports gear, the muscle. So talk about that a little bit. What are some of the myths that people have about the kind of kink BDSM work that you do? Are there any myths?
You mean like sex work in general?
Sure, yeah, just people, things that you stumble upon that people don't quite understand about the work.
They think a lot of, usually I get this negativity from like vanilla people. They don't want to try experimenting.
God bless those vanilla people.
They just like, they expect me to like keep it in the bedroom and not really displaying it. For me, it was just like educational, like, you know, teaching people to try new things. And there are so many kinks out there. I'm not into everything. Certain things I'm turned on, I talk about it. Then I explain to people why it's a turned on, why it's hot, why the mentality behind it. Because once they get it, they'll want to experiment it with their partner. It's like adding an extra spice to the relationship, which I find really... I don't know, like happy when I introduce something new for them. A lot of people think that sex actors, we're just like, we're just like a whole bunch of whores. But it's not. I decided to go in there because like, I love it. I love to educate people. I love to help open their mind to try new things. And also it just like help bring this kind of fantasy on screen for people to see and to relieve stress.
Beautiful. I love it. I think porn and sex work are such necessary outlets and resources. Cage Jock, where can people find you and your work?
I am available on my social media, and you can check my Twitter and my Instagram is under the same handle, Cage Jock. And you can just Google me and you'll find it. That's all the information.
You're all over. You're all over. Well, thanks so much for being on Loveline.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline with Dr. Chris on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page. And coming up next, we got Ryan Sheldon joining us. But right now, it's time for those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex of world. And we want you to explore with confidence. All right, here we go. So this one is something that came into my DM via conversation. Someone asked me about disclosing HIV status and when that's important to be done. And it's a very, very, very controversial topic. So I'm going to use the broad strokes. A lot of people have a lot of different thoughts about this. A couple points. Number one, you, the listener, you are always responsible for your own sexual health and wellness, which means you need to ask questions. Please do not depend upon the other individual, partner or partners, to share with you their status. You always need to ask. So if someone doesn't bring something up, don't assume that that means that they don't have a status to share. That's number one. Number two, as far as your own disclosures to a potential partner, I tell people that we operate generally from the theory of informed consent, and that someone can only consent to an activity if they understand all the different factors involved in it. So before sexual activity occurs, that's when I believe you should disclose what someone might be coming in contact with. Number three, it is, though, an exercise in trust, meaning there's a lot of stigma around STDs, STIs, and not everyone's a safe person to bring these things to. Not everyone's educated enough, and some people still stigmatized. And so I want you to always assess the safety and maturity of the individual that you might be making a disclosure to, because not everyone is safe to make that disclosure. Some people can be under the threat of violence and whatnot. So you got to consider all these factors. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex of world. We want you to explore with confidence. Coming up next, Ryan Sheldon, body positive activist, is joining us. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love line, 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 love line
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. We got our question of the night up on our Loveline AG show, and we got Jared Hill, who'll be joining us later to talk about an event that he's hosting tonight because of the Democratic debates. And look, I'm having a rough night. I told y'all I was sick. Anything I fumble tonight, I'm blaming my brain fog. All right, but more importantly, we got Ryan Sheldon, body acceptance activist.
What up?
And Bonobos, the face of the new Bonobos campaign. I look, so when we had last week, we had one of their creative director stylist guys on, and I was telling him that Bonobos, can't say it. Help me.
Bonobos.
That I've worn their gear for a long time.
Have you?
Yeah, that they were one of the first people who did the drop crotch pants before they really truly caught fire, and that I still have a couple pairs I got through them that are like fit phenomenally.
Oh, that's so interesting. I never really wore their clothes until I was on set, and their clothes for a larger size body fits perfectly. They've done a really great job, and it's really hard for someone my size to find clothing that fits, and it's like right off the rack fits.
Yeah, not okay. So their stuff fits well. And again, we're actually not trying to plug their company. I'm just literally saying this on my own accord. I love their cuts. I love their styles, and it's also high quality stuff. Okay, but let's get out of that.
Let's
now
get
that we're
it.
Like PR in them. So this topic has kind of caught fire. The Jillian Michaels interview with Lizzo, it's still going. BuzzFeed did an article and pulled my Instagram comment into that, which got me trolled to the end of my life. So can we just talk quickly about the concept of thin privilege?
Yeah, I think that thin privilege is something that people aren't even really aware of what it is.
No.
They don't even acknowledge that they have it.
People were rolling their eyes on my page because I said that Jillian Michaels is coming from a position of thin privilege, and they're like, oh, look, another social justice warrior making up words. And I was like, no, y'all, so this is a real thing. So talk to us about this for a second.
I mean, there's a lot of things, but I think one of the most frustrating things in the community, like the body image community, body positivity, body neutrality community, is people not addressing their privilege in a lot of communities. And I think that thin privilege is a huge thing. So I don't know. How do you even explain thin
privilege? I usually say the opposite. I'll say thin privilege means you've never had your body shape used against you. As a result of body shape you have, you've never had your life limited or been targeted because of it.
100%. It's almost like the opposite of fat phobic, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, having a smaller, thinner body, congratulations on the fact that like everything's kind of centered around you. You know, walking into a store that you'll most likely find sizes that fit you, that entering a theater or a public space, you'll most likely find a seat you can fit in.
And you can go to a gym and not be afraid, or you can fit into fitness clothing to work out.
And it's not to slam anybody as much as it's just to say that you're not going to be aware of the struggles that someone else might have because you don't encounter them.
100%.
And that's why like it's interesting because someone like Lizzo comes out and she's letting people start to see themselves reflected back and feel good in the body they have and realize like I can wear what I want and move through the world.
Right.
Like who wouldn't be on board with that?
Well, I think, you know, Jillian has been fat shaming people for over a decade on TV. So I think that there's that. But is it Bob
Harper?
Harper made the comment how he's not going to talk about anybody and give advice, unsolicited advice, basically. So I think that she just kind of overstepped because it's ridiculous. I get where she's coming from, but like she's not a doctor. I don't know.
Yeah,
she's not Lizzo's doctor. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, she's not. I mean, and I think the interesting thing is also she's like doubling down. She's like, I am so far from an apology. I'm going to just keep reinforcing my position.
Well, yeah, that's her brand, isn't it?
But it's like, here's the thing. If you say something that makes anyone feel bad in the world, even if you still believe in what you say, there's still space to be like, I'm sorry I made people feel bad. Like, you can at least lean into that part.
Yeah. Well, she did say she enjoys her music.
But see, that's upsetting to me, too, because, like, you want to celebrate an aspect of her, but then you want to slam the rest of her. It's kind of like, can you take the good with the bad? It's kind of like, there was a great meme that I love where people said, all the gays that are all, like, pro-Lizzo, like, but then you're hating people with her same body size at the same time.
100%. I'm curious, like, what brought up that comment from her to begin with. I don't really know, but did she just decide to bring it up, or was it a conversation like during an interview that got raised?
I don't know, but when we come back, I want to hear about something that happened to you over the holidays around dieting.
Oh boy. All right.
I know, because I want to hear them. I want to see if you cry.
I've cried enough already. I'm good. No.
All right. When we come back, we'll be talking about that question tonight. It's up on our Loveline IG page. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. Sorry, we're doing a little photo shoot during the break.
I'm used to it, guys.
I'm not.
No, but you look great, though. You do.
Thank you. I'm going to post it on my IG in a few seconds. You know, when we were chatting, you were saying something about your mom putting you on a diet over the holiday.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, to be fair, we did kind of talk about this before I left.
But hearing it again, it sounded like a whole new story.
I don't want to say it was like malintent because it really wasn't. It was more. Yeah, she was like, Ryan, I love her. She's the sweetest person. Okay. She really is. But like, and this is going to like not dogging her, but she's like, Ryan, it looks like you've gained weight. I can tell because it's in your face. And I've never been able to tell that before. I'm like, I was pretty not happy about that.
But see, this is, I love you sharing the story. And I feel like every time I see you share this exact story, because I think it's just, there's so much power in this, that you, someone who's built a career on your body exactly as it is, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And you also work with NADA, the National...
NADA.
NADA. I can't pronounce anything tonight.
It's okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm on cold meds. I don't know where I am right now. I keep trying to eat my microphone. You're like, that is not a Twizzler. It is a microphone and a pen. That even with all of that happening in your life, you still are a human being that goes home to a family that doesn't understand.
Yeah, I think that unfortunately that's most families out there,
right.
From what I've heard. Like, there's so many people that are struggling, just like everybody struggles with something. And for some reason, when it comes to like body image and, you know, eating issues and disordered eating, it's just one of those things that people can't seem to comprehend.
Yeah, I think I was telling you a couple months back that my father and I go home used to like do a weird, like, am I going to the gym still check? Where he would like touch my shoulders and be like,
yeah.
Oh, you feel muscular. Like,
yeah,
you still
go
to the gym.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah.
Yeah, that's not great.
So when your mom, though, when you talk about the campaigns that you're shooting, what does she say?
Oh, she's so proud.
But does she get that it's rooted in you being larger bodied?
I think so. I don't know.
No.
That's a good question, though, because it's funny because, so she suggested a diet. She suggested that I go to Weight Watchers.
Wow.
She took me with her. I went, but I was not buying into it because it's really unhealthy for me, but I did it to appease her. It just was going to be easier. And then... she said, this is going to be so good for you when you go on all of your shoots because you're going to drop a few pounds. And
but
I'm like,
that's so, she doesn't get it.
She doesn't get it. And
because
this is,
what would happen if you showed up on your set, let's say 30 pounds lighter?
Oh, I was told to not lose weight.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
It's rooted in your body as it is now.
And think about this, that if this is like what I built my career around, like I talk around the country about this and my own mother doesn't necessarily understand it. So there's a lot of people out there that this isn't their center of their life, but they're struggling. Imagine how their families perceive them.
But also I think it's humanizing for people to realize that like you don't live on a silver lining cloud.
No. Oh,
which people, it's probably easy for them to assume.
No, like, people think I have everything together. Let me tell you.
Everyone's accepted Ryan as he is. His family members are on board with his body. You don't struggle at all with your body yourself. Dating, love, and sex are easy. It's like, no, you're a person.
All of those things are hard for me. My body, sex is like so challenging for me because of my size and because of the judgment that, you know, probably from my past, what people have said to me in my past that's carried on to now. But like, I can't tell you how many dates I go on and they're like, the guys are like, oh, you know, you're really nice. Let's be friends, but we're not into it. And I know why they're not into it. It's because maybe I don't fit that ideal body that they were thinking I might have.
Yeah. It's hard to get through our culture with no issues around our bodies. And then if your body is not necessarily fitting into the whatever that culture is saying is the gold standard, harder.
Totally. And it like contradicts everything that I do, right? Because I get paid to look a certain way.
That's right.
And then I go on dates and they're like, we like you as a friend, but we don't want to date you romantically. So like, what's right and what's wrong? I don't know.
Are we able to talk yet about some of the stuff coming down the road for you professionally?
I mean,
okay.
Not that one thing I mentioned.
Right.
But you did mention something earlier, which I was surprised you mentioned, so hopefully that's okay.
Oh, well, if it's not, sorry about it.
No, but it's really cool stuff, and actually, I'm really excited because what's coming out, it's like an episodic docu-series type of thing.
Can't
on a
wait.
Really big platform about different advocates and me being one of them, and it's about, you know, my struggles with body image, particularly around dating and how dating has been really challenging for me because I've been in relationships that, you know, weren't great. I was cheated on for people that have had a way better body than I have, and it's kind of like walking you through that whole experience and like what it's like for me to go on a date. And it is
I can't wait to pull sound bites and play them.
I think they edited a lot of the good ones out, but there are some good ones in there. Like, there's some good ones.
I'll be like, Ryan, let's hear Ryan, and we'll play that sound bite. Like, so that was you, buddy.
There are some good ones.
And it was you.
They're masters at editing, so not all of it. No, it's all pretty much real.
I can't wait. It's going to be good stuff. Ryan Sheldon, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Real Ryan Sheldon.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Coming up next, Jared Hill will be joining us to talk about the debate set. He's going to be hosting a live event tonight on air, and then our question of the night. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline with Dr. Chris on channel Q.
All right, we're back. Question of the night's up on our Loveline IG page. We'll be talking about that. But before we do, Mr. Jared Hill from Drop the Subjects here, because tonight,
that's me,
right after Loveline, you'll be doing debate night in late night.
That's
breaking
right.
down the Democratic debate.
It's debate night in late night with Jared Hill.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me start again. After Loveline, directly after, will be debate night in late night with Jared Hill.
That's me. Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited. I know what I'm listening to.
Coming up tonight at 9 o'clock Pacific, midnight Eastern, we're going to be doing a debate recap. Basically, the Democratic presidential debate just wrapped up, and we're going to be kind of going through the highlights of the night. It's been an interesting kind of debate with only 6 candidates this time around, seeing Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, their first time, kind of meeting after
face to face.
These headlines,
right.
Exactly,
yeah.
About whether or not Bernie Sanders believes a woman could win. He had an interesting answer. Elizabeth Warren's response to his answer was probably the biggest moment of the night, so we'll have that. We've got a lot of different clips to talk about, and really kind of looking at what this means going forward. This is the last presidential debate before the Iowa caucus, and so this was in Des Moines, Iowa. We're going to talk about how this is going to impact the candidates as they go into the caucus, and what's interesting is the 3 of the 4 top-tier candidates have to go back to the Senate to sit in an impeachment trial for the next couple of weeks. And that's going to fare well for at least one of the candidates. So we'll kind of talk about what that means and all those different things coming up in about 20 minutes.
I can't wait to listen, because I'm on air as this is happening behind me.
Yes.
I did not get to watch.
Yeah.
I think this is probably actually not, for me, it's one of the more important and also one of the more interesting ones.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be driving home listening to y'all.
Absolutely.
So stick around with us and do our question tonight, yeah?
Let's do it. Come
okay.
On.
So tonight's question tonight was, what is the most dishonest thing what are people most dishonest about on their online dating profiles?
Question of the night.
I always forget that. What would you say you think it is?
I think what they look like.
Really?
Yeah, I think people are most dishonest about what they look like. And I'm even guilty of this, because I just realized, like, my profile has me with short hair from summer, and my hair is growing out a little bit now, and I'm like, oh, do I need to change my photos?
Yes, you
like,
do. Yes, you do, because I am... Okay, let's go. Let's go there.
Let's go there.
So I have specific opinions about facial hair.
Yeah.
Patterns and situations.
Sure. Okay.
And there are some things that I have. Look, we all have triggers.
Yes.
And we don't necessarily know where they're from. And so there's a couple different possible facial hair options that I can't get down with.
Like?
I don't want to open that up.
Come on.
I am not.
Let's just be honest.
I'm not a mustache person.
Okay. Like a mustache. A goatee maybe, but not a mustache.
I can do goatee.
Okay.
I can do beard. I cannot do a flying solo mustache.
Okay.
I have interesting associations related to my dad from when I was a child.
Mm.
I just can't eroticize that.
Okay.
I'm not saying anything wrong with being a mustached. It's just not my jam.
Gotcha.
So if someone currently had one and they're not in their photos and I showed up on the date, it would be very difficult for me.
Interesting. I get that.
And if you have in your photos all mustache stand pictures, and then are all in your clean shaven, I might never have made it to the date.
Is that like a nation somewhere?
It's a nation somewhere far, far away that is a small town in the Eastern Bloc.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll get my passport and I'll go visit.
Please, Jarrett, for the love of all that is sex and relationship, update those photos.
Yeah, it just occurred to me last night. I was like, oh, I just changed my hair over the past week, and like it's twisted now and it's a little bit different. And I was like, I need to update my photos, just because like I don't want to be misrepresenting myself. I'm also like not really supposed to be on dating apps right now. I'm just kind of like taking a bit of a break.
Okay.
But yeah, it occurred to me. I was like, this is something I got to think about, because I don't want anyone to say that I'm misrepresenting myself. But so I think that's the thing that people lie about the most on the dating apps. What they look like.
True, yeah. That, and I wish they were a little, you know, when people write like must love dogs, I'm always like, thank you for putting that, because no thank you.
Jeez Louise. Whenever I see someone with their pets like all throughout their profile, it's a big turnoff for me.
It is for me as well.
Yeah, it's like,
I don't want your dog ever on my lap.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But their cat, you would be all about it.
And please don't think your dog's coming on dates with us.
Oh, hell no.
Like, I don't want to have to sit outside by the door wherever the dog needs to be.
Yeah.
And I don't want to deal with every 2 seconds being like, oh, you hungry? Are you hungry? What's going on down
yeah.
here?
Yeah.
Oh, and passerbyers stopping as though it's the most beautiful thing they've ever seen. It's
oh
a
my
dog.
God.
Calm down. You've seen it before. You'll see him again. But, Google its picture.
But if this was a cat, you'd be all about it.
I don't know. I'm not really a pet person. I have a cat. I'm not a cat person.
I thought you were a cat lover.
I'm a cat lover, but I went to the CatCon, the cat convention,
wow.
Pasadena. I got like...
I realize people can hear you.
But right. I'm just saying that...
Because I'm totes judging.
But I'm not a pets person. I'm not a pet person. I'm generally not.
We talk about this on Drop the Subject all the time. I love animals. I'm not a pet person.
Thank you! Yes, it does make sense.
I love animals enough to know that they should not live in my home.
Thank you, or touch me.
Yeah, or be in my vicinity. Like, be over there. Be gorgeous.
Like, just so you know,
there.
The dog will never be sleeping in bed with us.
Oh,
ever.
No, I don't understand the appeal of
ever,
that.
Ever.
I just don't get it.
I agree. His dirty, filthy feet, which just dragged around the city to pee, got brought back in.
But also, to be clear, I feel that way about the cat, too.
My cat's feet do not go outside the house.
I don't want a cat in bed with me.
My cat, luckily, is not allowed to sleep in bed with me either.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm always worried that a cat is going to scratch and kill me. And so, like, Fair. The idea of, like, when people say, like, oh, I wake up and my cat is standing on top of me, or I wake up and my cat is on my face, I would run out of the house.
I agree. You should. My cat sleeps under my bed.
Yeah, see, no. Mm-mm.
Really?
I'd be freaked out.
Why?
I cannot be comfortable with a cat in the room. Yeah.
You have to calm down a little bit.
Sorry.
Sorry about it.
Sorry. Yeah, no, it's a childhood thing. Like, kind of like you with the mustache.
For
me, across the street, there was Pat the cat lady who had 9 cats in a one-bedroom apartment.
I wonder if Mustachistan is near Katatistan.
It's got to be. They are probably kissing cousins or something like that. Like, they share a border.
Like, they definitely share a problematic border.
They've got to.
Very volatile.
Yeah.
So other things that the listener said that most people are dishonest about their dating profile, their appearance. That's mm-hmm. the main one.
Yeah.
Well, it's time to go to break, so we'll just go with that one. Appearance is the main one. They're all appearance-based.
Translation, Jarrett was right.
So stick around after yes. Loveline to listen to Debate Night in Late Night with Jarrett Hill.
Yes.
You guys will be breaking down the Democratic debates. Coming up next, yeah. DMs. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline. This is Loveline with Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And now it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding into the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sex world. We want you to explore with confidence. All right, here we go. It's a simple question, but I think it's an important question. Dear Dr. Chris, how do you politely break things off with someone you are casually seeing instead of ghosting them? I love the question because it implies that you're aware of the fact that ghosting is a horrible, horrible, not very nice thing to do. You know, listen, dating is about often hurting and being hurt, meaning it's a numbers game. Dating is a process of exploring whether or not someone is compatible in your life, whether or not you have chemistry, and sometimes that means letting someone down. And people ask all the time, the other question that comes with this is, how do I let someone down or how do I break up with someone without hurting their feelings? You can't. You're going to disappoint them, you know, and you do it anyway. And that's the most loving thing you can do. It's very mature. And I'm a fan of doing it however you need to do it so that it gets done. Some people aren't able to do it face to face. Some people don't want it done face to face. I know I've said this before. If I'm seeing someone and they want to end it, please don't drag me out to dinner and make a big show about it. You can just get me on the phone, talk it out with me, whatever it is. So for some people, that even means maybe sending a text if you haven't really spent that much time together. But even if it's brand new, there's something very loving about letting someone know what you're thinking, where you're at. And a lot of people will welcome that because, again, so many people are sitting down with their friends or coming into my office clinically trying to figure out what the interest level is of this other person, and you're telling them. So if you really like someone, let them know you like them. If you are not interested in seeing them anymore, let them know that. And really honestly share with them what it is you're looking to have happen afterwards. Maybe you don't want to have anything else to do with them. Maybe you truly do want to be friends, but really be honest and make that known. But basically, how do you politely break things off? The standard text that I used to use is, hey, it's been really great hanging out with you. Unfortunately, I don't feel as though the chemistry is really there. Take care of yourself. you know, all the best. And I don't lie and say I want to be friends. I don't say anything that's confusing. I don't say it's a timing issue. I don't make it about anything other than what it truly is about, so that they can just be free and move on with their life. So just be honest, be forthcoming. Don't, you know, confuse them. Don't leave them strung along or hanging in there. Just be clear, be direct, be honest, and hopefully they'll appreciate that, because you're giving them a gift by just letting them know what's going on and what you're looking to do. Because again, there's nothing worse than someone being confused and feeling lost. And, you know, again, you don't want to leave injured people in your wake any more so than just the fact that you don't like them and feelings can get hurt around that. So I appreciate your questions. Let's make that goal, the goal for everyone moving into the new year, that we're not going to ghost people anymore. And if we're no longer interested in someone, we're going to be very forthcoming about that, you know, because that's an act of care. So, all right, cool. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sex world. We want you to explore with confidence. Those DMs come from our Loveline IG page. So if you got a DM that you want me to answer on air, slide into our IG page at Loveline and tell us what your question is. Or you can go to my at Dr. Donahue page and put it in my DMs. And that's where the questions come from. Or give us a call, 833-LOVE-001, 833-LOVE-001. But coming up next, debate night in late night with Jarryd Hill. So stick around, listen to that one. And as always, at We Are Channel. ChannelQ.com. You can listen to all Loveline episodes podcasted. You can post them, share them, binge them. And we'll be back tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks for hanging out with me. And y'all have an awesome, awesome night.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.